It's hard to have a home poker game without playing cards, and there is a difference. Top Pair is proud to feature and recommend J-Design cards. Made of durable plastic, the right thickness for easy shuffling and dealing, plus a unique look with a pip placement, artistic backs, striking face cards, and a huge variety of colors. Give your home game players something to talk about by playing with the distinctive J-Design cards. Check the Top Pair homepage, toppair.net, for a link, or go to classicplayingcards.com and order yours today.
This is Barry Greenstein, and you're listening to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast.
Welcome to Top Pair, tales, tips, and discussions from two veterans of the poker home game scene. Without further ado, here are your hosts.
October's bright blue weather, one of my favorite months of the year and a great time for home game poker. This time around, Robbie updates us on his poker exploits during his recent company outing. We have a very special guest we'll be talking with, Gerald Tendler, author of The Mental Game of Poker and The Mental Game of Poker Part 2. He has some fascinating insights on how we're sometimes our own worst enemy at the poker table. We wrap up with words of wisdom from our old friend Gutterball. We haven't heard from him in a while, but he's always entertaining. Hey, Chelsea, have you decided on your Halloween costume yet?
Hey, how you running? Beats, suckouts, triumphs, and tragedies from last week's home game play.
Well, Robbie, I know last we talked you were excited about getting packed for a little company getaway and planning on playing a little poker with your comrades and fellow employees. How did that go?
It was very fun, you know, which is not code for I lost a ton. It was, but it was really fun. You know, the reason I look forward to it is, you know, just in general, any sort of company outing, you get the chance to, you know, interact with and hang out with people you see on a normal basis, but, you know, not unrelated to work, just in a very relaxed setting. So it was definitely a very fun time, both at and away, from the poker tables. You know, we went to a place called Eilat. That's the southern tip of Israel, and you know, Israel's a kind of a small country, about the size of the state of New Jersey. But you can fly sort of from one end to the other. So we flew in both directions under an hour from Tel Aviv, and it was pretty cool. I mean, I wrote a blog post about it, about the general, you know, what it's like, because the fact is, you know, if you're going to go on, you know, a plane ride away, it's not like they've got a whole bunch of poker tables or anything like that. We had to sort of, well, I had to bring all of the equipment with me, you know, which means sort of like schlepping this big, you know, 10-pound case. It was a small set, you know, 300 poker chips. But, you know, when you bring it on a plane and, you know, of course, with the Israeli security, is this yours? What is it doing here? And all that, you know, you had to sort of explain it. But I was ready, you know, just I wanted that badly to play that I'm willing to go through the airport security with my poker chips.
Have your story all well rehearsed. So
oh,
you
sure.
Know exactly what to say and what not to say.
I packed them myself. They belonged to me, the whole deal. So, you know, that was getting it together. And, you know, we had a, you know, we have like over 200 people in our company. So these, you know, when we're all around the, you know, the hotel area over there doing a whole bunch of different things. So we did have a WhatsApp group to sort of try and get ourselves together, and that was a bit of a chore, because the fact is, you know, it was just 2 days and one night, and, you know, when you're at a hotel, you know, yes, you know, we love playing poker and stuff, but you want to sort of use the hotel amenities, and, you know, I went to the fitness room and the pool, and, you know, then, at night, you want to try to get a game together, and then, you know, there's this whole dance party going on, so we were finally able to get the game together, and it wasn't, unfortunately, one sort of long, you know, 12-hour session or something, but, it was, I guess, because there was just so much going on, short bursts. We had, like, you know, a couple hours here, a couple hours there, and it was a different makeup of, I don't know, I guess a total of 10 of us were interested, and, you know, I was at all the sessions because I had the chips, and, you know, that's, I'm a degen in that respect, but yeah, we did end up getting it together. All in all, I ended up even, I guess, you'd say till the last shekel, I was neither up nor down, and, you know, on the one hand, it's definitely better than, you know, ending up, you know, minus for the trip. But, on the other hand, considering it played for a number of hours, you know, it's okay. But the people with whom I play, I wouldn't you know, I wouldn't call them the Phil Ivies and the Daniel Negreanus of the poker world. You know, like they don't, they know the order of the hands, but that's pretty much it. I mean, being pretty involved, you know, I do, doing a poker podcast, doing all the poker writing. I know a good amount, you know, and, I know the rules of the game and you can spot basic tells and that sort of thing. And you sort of go in thinking, okay, you know, licking your lips and rubbing your hands together. This is going to be a really profitable time. It doesn't always work out that way, unfortunately.
Now there's always that element.
Yeah, there's always that element. But, you know, in the end, it is, it was much more of a camaraderie type of setting. You know, we only played hold and we didn't, you know, if I had to even start explaining to them what exactly is Omaha, you know, the next basic variation, they'd be like, huh? Like, what's going on? So they know they're hold'em and that's okay. But it was very fun. And, you know, the thing is, because, you know, there's no real like poker room in there and we weren't going to play in somebody's room. So we actually played, you know, right out in the hotel lobby. So that was kind of interesting. You don't want to attract too many, like, this is the one place where you don't want railbirds, you know, like where you don't want to get in trouble or anything. And plus you want to sort of keep a little bit of an intimate setting. But, you know, because of that, and I know we've talked about this in the past couple episodes, is the idea of how do you keep track of the money? You don't want to be putting money out there in cash and worrying about that. So I was sort of keeping track of everything on a paper, you know, with a pen and everything, and writing down the names and how much people had bought in for, et cetera. And I was the only one dealing with the chips just to make sure it was all orderly. And I will just, you know, maybe disclaimer, maybe that's why I wasn't winning, because I was focused on all the logistics of the game. I don't know, but that'll just be my little excuse. And then, you know, afterwards, once we got back to the office, after the trip, we went home and then we got back to the office. That's when everyone just sort of settled up. You know, I sent out an email to everybody. Okay, this is who's won. This is who's lost. How much? And come down to my office on the first floor. And, you know, let's have the people who owe come to me in the first part of the day. Then after lunch, everyone who is owed money, then, you know, I'll disperse everything. And, somehow we ended up with a few extra shekels or something. So I just donated that to charity. Although I think, you know, in retrospect, having schlepped the chips and followed the game and stuff, maybe that, you know, maybe I could have been the charity du jour, but
you should have rewarded yourself. You didn't, you know, you didn't take a rake, but you should take a convenience fee, I guess you could call it.
Well, I guess the reward is just in, you know, being able to tell the story here on the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast and on my blog as well. I wrote about it over at Card Player Lifestyle.
Now, were you the designated dealer then, or did you pass the deal? I know a lot of times when you're playing with people that don't play a lot of poker and are a little unsure of the protocol and the manners and the system and that they don't, they kind of shy away from dealing. So did you take that on too, or did you pass the deal?
I did. Good question. I did omit that from the story, but yes, it's both from their standpoint as well as from my, you know, like, you know, the player in me wants to just see as many hands as possible. And, you know, if you think you've got an advantage to have as many opportunities to take advantage as possible, but it's also just, you know, to get the game going. Like you said, you know, if they don't really know what they're doing, you don't want, they also see, like, once I've dealt the cards, okay, he knows what he's doing. Let's let him, you know, to do it. And, you know, they realize that could be trusted and that sort of thing. But yeah, it definitely helps keep the game going and keep things interesting. Because, you know, it is a very relaxed atmosphere when everyone's on a company vacation. So to keep people's attention is kind of an important thing, and rather than getting them talking about, you know, their exploits at the pool. You know?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a good time. Appreciate the update on that. We'll put a link on our main page to your blog, so if people want to read a little more in depth about what happened, they can. And I think that'd be a super thing to hear from some of our listeners about, if they're ever in that kind of a position where they're out with like a company retreat or something, and they play poker with their comrades or their peers, and kind of as a team building or a esprit de corps building type of episode or exercise. So if you've got any tales on that or anything else that we talk about here on the podcast, we encourage you. We love to hear from you. Send us your feedback in an email at feedback@toppair.net.
And, you know, with the whole anything else that we talk about, you know, we'll be having Jared Tendler on, author of The Mental Game of Poker, very soon. So we'd be happy to hear your thoughts about that, you know, via email as well as, on social media. You can find us at Top Pair, at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast on Facebook, as well as at Top Pair, on Twitter.
And speaking of social media, just before we did this broadcast today, I was kind of going through my notes on Facebook and all the different poker websites and newsletters and things that I track, and found out that Phil Ivey is actually going to be on, it's called 60 Minute Sports. I guess it's a CBS production, but it's actually going to be on Showtime. So it's the cable pay network Showtime, but it'll be next Tuesday evening. It's the October 7th, although if I know Showtime, they do repeat it fairly often. But it'll be, I don't know how much of the 60 Minutes is Phil Ivey, but I guess it's going to be a pretty lengthy segment. I saw a preview of it, but kind of the main focus of it is the controversy that is embroiled in with this edge sorting, I think they're calling it, lawsuits, where he was playing Baccarat in Europe and also here at a casino in the States, where he was taking an advantage because he spotted a certain pattern in the edge of the cards that the casino was, or card room were using, and that was able to give him kind of an insight into what some of the cards were and gave him a real advantage, and was very successful doing that. And now the casinos have kind of backed up and said, hey, you know, that wasn't what we should have been doing. That was kind of on the edge of cheating, and so we're not going to pay you your winnings. I think they refunded back his investment.
Right.
They weren't going to pay him any winnings. Mm-hmm. And he is in turn suing the casinos, and it's gotten to be kind of a story. And I, you know, there's a fair amount of money involved, so obviously it's going to be worth his while from that standpoint. But in hearing the little blurbs that I heard in the preview, I think he's more motivated or as motivated and for money as to kind of clear his reputation. Mm-hmm. He says, you know, that's my reputation, particularly in the profession I've chosen as professional poker or professional gambler. I've got to have that reputation that I shoot square and I can be trusted and I don't cheat. And he wants his day in court to prove that no, I'm not a cheater. I'm an advantage player. I take every advantage I can that falls within the rules, but that's what I do. So
I think in general, I mean, everyone who's familiar with the, you know, at least what's being released about the details of the story there, you know, at least in the poker world, we're all very firmly in his corner. And I think, you know, kudos to Phil, you know, the new Phil Ivey 2.0, the one who speaks to the media is the one that we've got right now, not the one who's sort of been, you know, reluctant to speak out in previous years. I was lucky enough to email him, you know, to interview him a few months back as well on my site. And I think it's just, you know, for him that he is, you know, going out there in public and speaking his piece. And I think that's, you know, not just good for him, but it's good for, you know, all the fans of the game and, you know, the best player in the game getting on, you know, mainstream television. Whatever he's talking about is a good thing for poker. And definitely tune in, and I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah, I think it should be a good show. And as a matter of fact, to that same point, the interviewer that was in this little preview that I saw said that he had actually been trying to get Phil Ivey on as a guest for 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he, thanks to this Phil Ivey 2.0, you know, he and this controversy where Phil wanted to get his story out, he was able to finally get him. But it didn't look like it was going to be all about the lawsuit. There was going to be some talk about how he does his poker, and I think they actually interviewed him as part of the WSOP last summer. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you're a poker player, I think it'll be really entertaining. So that 60 Minute Sports is the name of the show, and it's on Showtime Network. Premieres this Tuesday, the October 7th, in the evening. But like I say, I think it'll be rebroadcast or repeated several times. So, you know, Doyle Brunson has said of Hold'em that it takes a minute to learn and a lifetime to master. That can be said of poker in general. Oftentimes, we don't even consider the mental side of the game.
Hey, look who we found hanging around. Let's get a mic for him and see what he has to say.
So we're very happy to have a special guest with us today. His name is Jared Tendler. He is the author of best known as the author of The Mental Game of Poker. Has written two volumes, volume one, volume two. Excellent books, I can say so. Read them myself. They've helped me personally on a personal level, and I've reviewed them as well on my Card Player Lifestyle blog. Jared has also written for, he's been featured and interviewed in a number of well-known poker publications on Poker News, PokerStrategy.com, Sky Poker, you know, you name it, he's been there. He's very well-known within the poker industry. He's also a little-known fact, within the poker world, a three-time collegiate All-American golfer. That's something I didn't know when we were researching you, Jared. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Robbie. Thanks, Bruce. Good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we're glad you could join us. This fascinating subject.
Yeah. I'm happy to be here. It's a fascinating subject for me. I've one kind of very dear to my heart because it's been something that's been important to me for a very long time and something that I truly enjoy talking about. So it's always nice to talk with different people about this topic because everybody has a unique perspective and it's always. I'm very curious to kind of hear where you guys are going to take it today.
Okay. Cool. Well, you say it's something near and dear to your heart, but we've got to ask you then. So, you know, no one, you know, goes off to college and studies psychology and says to themselves, okay, once I get my degree, I'm going to help poker players with their mental game. So how exactly did you, you know, become the Mr. Mental Game of Poker?
Oh, no, that was exactly my plan. No, okay. I'm kidding. no, and psychology wasn't even in the cards for me when I started college. I was basically going there. I wanted to play professional golf was the main goal, but I was also smart enough to know that I needed to get a degree, so I went to a decent school and had a business degree because it was what I was good at. My family had been in businesses, and so I was sort of naturally good at it and could spend most of my time not in working on my studies and instead, you know, focusing on golf and having fun. But then, you know, probably midway through my college career, it became more and more evident that the mental game was really what was holding me back. My freshman year, I tried to qualify for the U.S. Open, which, if people don't know, there are two rounds of qualifying. The first round is called local qualifying. It's, you know, probably 80% professionals who are kind of trying to make it on the mini tours, smaller professional golf, and then the rest are kind of amateurs. And then if you move on to that stage, then they have what's called sectional qualifying. And that is basically a mini PGA Tour event because most of the players that play in the U.S. Open have to qualify. There's only maybe 40% are exempt and get to miss it. So you've got, you know, a majority of that tournament is PGA Tour players or European Tour players. I missed going from stage one, from the local qualifying to the sectionals by a shot. And it was basically because I choked over my short putts. I missed. I three putted four times and missed a handful of short putts. So, you know, you could say woulda, coulda, shoulda, but what I took from that was the mind matters. And, you know, if I'm going to make it as a professional, I need to be able to conquer my fear and the pressure that was kind of overwhelming me. So that was kind of the beginnings of it was, you know, freshman year. And then kind of as I was going along and just realizing more and more how important it was and eventually decided to kind of forego my professional golf career because it was just going to be such a huge task. And I kind of was realizing how much better the rest of the players were out there and how long it was going to take. So I decided to get a degree in counseling psychology. And the reason I decided to do that was because the sports psychology stuff that I had read was really pretty behavioral. It was very basic in my mind. You're not focused, we'll teach you how to focus. You're anxious, we'll teach you not to be fearful. You know, sort of kind of ones and zeros, not very much depth. And I figured that there had to be some underlying reasons for the problems that I was experiencing. And, you know, the logic went, if I could solve my problems, then I could either play professional golf or I'd have a career because I'm sure that there are other people like me. And it started working with golfers since I knew that profession best and was kind of meandering along. At the time, I was thinking that I was a better coach than I was, but I realize now that I was not that much different than the other professionals in the field. So I was helpful, but I wasn't as transformational as I was hoping for. And then ironically,
like 10 years ago or so?
This is like 9 years ago. 2005 is when I started working with golfers. 2006, 2007. 2007 is when I met Dusty Schmidt, who was my first poker client. And he was a former professional golfer. So he, at 19, was leading the money list in a mini tour in California. And a couple years later had a heart attack. And so that took him out of the game. It was not like, you know, he wasn't doing cocaine or anything crazy. It was, he had like his valve in his heart, or not his valve, one of the arteries like almost like spasmed. Wow. And so it kind of took him out of the professional golf circuit. And he was kind of looking for another option, and a buddy of his introduced poker to him. And, you know, for those who don't know, he was one of the biggest online grinders back in 2007 to 2010 prior to Black Friday in the U.S. Played millions of hands a year, was making $1 million a year, playing poker, and then, you know, Black Friday hit. But, he, at the time that we met, was still kind of in his ascent. He was making around $20,000 a month, so obviously still very, very good income as a poker player. And then in the 4 or 5 months after we met and started working together, he made around $600,000. And that was mostly because of the help that I gave him in controlling his anger at the tables, because he was getting so angry that he was literally had a pile of broken mice and monitors in the corner of his his house. He had holes in the wall. He had ripped a desktop computer out of the wall and thrown it Ooh. On the ground. So anger was an issue both for him and his wife. That was my kind of entry into poker. And, you know, Dusty sort of showed me the ropes, got me to understand poker at a level that I had not known before. And just sort of saw a huge opportunity. I mean, there was, you know, the big guy in golf is a guy named Bob Rotella. He's written many books. He's worked with a lot of PGA Tour players. But there was really no Bob Rotella in poker. And so that was kind of the goal that I set out when I started, you know, now 7 years ago.
So I got to ask a question. I'm not a golfer, but, you know, I read about things and see movies and stuff like that. When you were missing those short putts, did you have the yips?
I didn't have the yips in a traditional sense, because
I love that phrase.
Yeah, it's a disease. I mean, it really is. Like you basically, like, the yips are more of like your golf stroke just looks really bad. Like you kind of like stab at it, jab at it. This was more like I was just kind of like missing it right or left. So I was still making a good stroke, but it was clear that the pressure was affecting me, but it wasn't quite as bad as a yip, or a shank, which a shank. Is also a fun word.
Good word for the sport. So you were able to, begin coaching Dusty even with just a rudimentary knowledge of poker, and you sort of learned it from him. That's very interesting.
Yeah, you talk about variance and good luck. I mean, having him be my first poker client was really just that. And maybe you could say that, you know, he had the foresight because of his golf experience and understood that psychology mattered to golf. And I think he had always – and he had mentioned that he always wanted to work with a golf psychologist back when he was playing golf. So it kind of – he was naturally more open to it perhaps than others. But the fact that – you know, he and I met each other randomly. We were at a golf resort where about 12 guys got together from three different cities. I was living in Arizona. There was guys from Southern California and from Oregon, and they were all like friends of each other. And so, you know, one day we were just playing golf together and got to talking. And then a couple months later, he contacted me. But wow. I mean, he was able to really relate the things that he was dealing with in poker in golf terms. So I was able to kind of understand. So, like, for example, you know, getting a bad beat, you know, I understand that perfectly now, but it would be the equivalent of hitting a perfect drive right down the middle of the fairway and having it hit a sprinkler head and going straight out of bounds. and then having that happen like every hole, like for the entire round, like you would go insane if that was happening.
Right.
But that's essentially the insanity that poker can put you through. And so, yeah, he was really the perfect person for me to start working with.
Had you played poker before yourself, recreationally or home games or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and growing up, like, so my summers when I first started taking golf seriously was we'd play golf in the morning, and then my buddies, we would sit around the pool and play setback and high-low and AC Ducey and five-card draw. And, you know, we'd be betting, you know, nickels, dimes, and quarters or whatever. And, you know, you make $4 and you'd feel like you know, conquered the world that day or whatever. But, you know, and you know, during family holidays, we would generally, you know, open up a deck of cards and play dealer's choice. And I mean, you know, certainly knew enough about the rules of the game and knew some basic strategy, but was a huge fish compared to the clients that I talk to now. And, you know, I've spent some time at casinos. I was lucky enough to have a straight flush in a 5-10 game at Foxwoods a couple years ago. My father and I had gone down there to play. We like to play some table games just to have some fun and shoot the shit. And, you know, so, but besides that, I mean, my knowledge of poker was pretty basic, but I knew enough about the game to kind of get started.
Well, and, you know, you've written these books at some point, I guess, after counseling enough players, you decided, you know, like, might as well write a book about it, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So, but like the target audience, you know, I guess, like you said, most of your clients, and from reading it, I'm not a professional player, obviously, but, you know, I do a lot of writing about it, and, you know, we talk about it, but it seems like the target audience is more the professional poker player. So, you know, would you say that, you know, I guess is it just as important for a recreational home game player to work on or have a strong mental game?
You know, it depends. I mean, the target audience for me was not professionals. It was people that took the game seriously. So if you're serious about learning the game, then the book is for you. I mean, because the mental game is going to matter. If you're a recreational player and you're there having fun, you know, maybe you want to take it to another level and you need to perhaps learn some things, I would say that the thing you want to do first is to learn more about strategy. I mean, the mental game is going to help you, but the analogy that I often give is that the Dalai Lama is a terrible golfer. So the mind is only so powerful.
And that's the
point. Like, I can bet you that the Dalai Lama has a better mental game than I do, but he is never going to beat me at golf
because
he can't break 100. And the last time I shot 100 was when I was, I think, 12 years old.
Okay.
so it's just, there's not a scenario where that's going to happen. But in poker, you know, the mental game can help to facilitate your ability to execute your strategy. But if you don't have much of a strategy to begin with, or you're just there having fun and, you know, splashing some money around, maybe throwing in a bluff because, you know, you sense that your friend is weak, you know, then you know, the mental game is really not going to help you much. What is really going to help you is to just get better, which in golf terms would be getting a better golf swing. In poker terms, it would be getting a better understanding of some of the basic strategy. That's where a majority of your time should be spent at the beginning. Now, if you are somebody who has mental problems in your life and you're also a beginning recreational player, then the book can help to perhaps deal with your anger issues or your anxiety issues or your confidence issues. But they're not going to just be about poker in that regard. It's also going to be about trying to get you to better understand your emotions and better understand how you can be correcting some of the issues that show up, not just in poker, but in your life.
Right.
Yeah, it looks like it would be, you know, maybe not necessarily are you going to, you know, go from your home game and all of a sudden try to be, you know, the shark that's taking everybody's money and that nobody wants to play with or anything. But from my standpoint, I know it probably would help with your peace of mind. Like you say, with the throwing the monitors and throwing the CPUs and things like that. I mean, I play home games probably 2 or 3 times a week, and there's a huge difference. You know, if I come home winners or if I come home losers, you know, if I come home winners, I'm thinking, wow, you know, maybe I'm finally getting this and I feel good and, you know, I've got a little spring to my step. But if I come home winners, I'm thinking, oh man, I'm just the crappiest player around and I've got so much to learn and this is such an uphill battle. And, you know, maybe I should pick up knitting or something like that. This is just going to drive me crazy. Or the same about bad beats. You know, if I get a bad beat, then I just, you do. You can't help but steam and go on tilt and blame everybody except yourself or the universe. That's a strategy too, is just to help your peace of mind when you're playing this crazy game that has so many ups and downs.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think what you're describing is somebody who takes the game seriously enough to care that much that you're going to, you know, have those swings in your confidence based on your results. So, you know, that's why I say it's really for people who take the game seriously, that seriously want to learn. If you're just there just to enjoy yourself and have fun, you're probably not going to read a book about poker anyway. A book about the mental game of poker.
So, I mean, well, then the question would be, does, you know, can they sort of work together? I mean, like, you know, you could, like,
oh,
you know, I've read the book myself, and I've written about my review, and like, it's definitely helped me in life, but, you know, is it the kind of thing, you know, like you use this, you know, not to get too deep into it, but use the concept of inchworm and slowly, you know, getting better at one aspect till it becomes unconscious, like, you know, your route to work when you drive, you know, it's, that sort of thing. Does that fly in the face of, you know, as a home game player, just trying to have fun when you're also, you know, taking the game seriously? You know, does the mental game work in there?
Yeah, it does. I mean, if you're taking the game seriously enough to care about your results like that, then yeah. So I think a lot of things that people don't realize too is that there's a mental side to technical mistakes. You know, if you start to get frustrated, then it's going, that frustration is going to expose some weaknesses. You may start to become more aggressive. Some people become more passive. That technical change, you know, you could fix it by saying, okay, well, I need to be less aggressive, or I need to be more aggressive, depending on which side of the coin you fall on. But forcing yourself to do that requires energy. It requires attention. You've got to remember to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you are able to reduce your frustration, then you don't have to worry about it. You're going to play a more solid style of poker automatically, because the frustration is not kind of forcing your hand in that direction.
And then you can also, like, crack a joke at the same time, because, you know, you're there to have a good time as well.
Exactly. It's not taking away from your enjoyment. I think you bring up a good point there, that if your anger issues, your fear is taking away from your enjoyment, then, you know, poker stops becoming something that's fun. Then it certainly could become valuable for that reason, because it's ideally going to be that way, especially if you're a recreational player and, you know, it's not just about the money. I mean, your time is valuable, not just on a money standpoint, but in general. And so if it's not being used to as enjoyably as it could, then there's a problem that can be fixed.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's another phase of it too. It's, you know, the tilt phase is definitely something. The self-esteem phase is something, whether you're winners or losers or anything like that. But the other thing I look at is, and I listened to your podcast and the one with Vanessa Selps in particular. It was really a pretty good podcast. Mm-hmm. She's a great guest. But I find that at home games about, and I call it being dialed in, you know. A lot of times I'll go to a home game and I won't be dialed in. I'll just be kind of playing on autopilot because I'm more interested in hearing how your son's doing in football or you know, what the new job your wife's got and how it's working out for her and things like that. And you're kind of on autopilot, where if you were really serious about the game, you'd be, like Vanessa said a lot of times, you'd be dialed in. You'd be playing your A game. You'd be looking at every single hand. I often thought that it'd be kind of fun, and I've never done it. I don't know why, to even have like a little set of crib notes on every single hand, like, okay, why did he bet that amount? What do you think he's holding in his hand? What position are you? You know, how much was his bet before the last one? How much money's in his pot? How much money, you know, just a whole, like almost a pilot's checklist of everything that you should think about before you either bet, raise, or fold, you know?
Yeah.
Or check, you know? But I found myself doing that, and I get exhausted. I mean, that is just like, you know, like going to the SATs or something like that. You know, you're just mentally wrung out. It's not like you're on an emotional roller coaster, but it's you just put so much hyper focus into it that then suddenly it's like, well, is this really what I want to do in my recreational home game?
Well, it's a good question. The answer on some level is that it could just be about training. You know, if you think about what you're trying to do mentally, it's no different than trying to increase the amount that you can lift in the gym or how far you could run. You know, mental endurance is a real thing. And the more that you train that particular skill, let's call it the skill of making a thought out decision, a well thought out decision, it's going to get easier over time once you start to really train it. So in the short term, it might mean that for the next 3 months, you're going to have to really work at it. You know, if I was going to change part of my technique in my golf swing, I couldn't just show up to the golf course one day and say, oh, you know, put my hands here, and then it's going to be there permanently. It takes a while to actually integrate that into my golf swing. It's the same thing in terms of your decision making. There are times where you have made thought out decisions like that, even when you're not really trying to. It just happens because you're focused. But then there are other times where you're just you're like, oh, you know, I'm in late position and I've got, you know, medium strength and, you know, everybody's kind of limped in, I raise. And you just kind of make an automatic decision. Well, so what you're trying to do over time is to just decrease the frequency that you make those autopiloted decisions and increase the amount that you're trying to make it similar to what you just described. And thinking about it like you're training could make those, you know, home games a little bit more fun, because it's like now it's not just about kind of showing up and hanging out, but it's also like a little bit of a workout. And I know for me, and everybody's a little bit different, I like to be good at something. And so putting that kind of effort in is fun for me. So there are many ways you can define having fun. And if having fun means taking it seriously for about 3 months, and then after 3 months, it starts to get easier to implement that new strategy, and then you are actually a better player for it, then, you know, it could be worthwhile.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, that's a great analogy, and you're good. You
know? Yeah, we brought Jared on for a reason.
Drawing the analogy between working out, because it's the same thing. You know, you just do the same exercise over and over and over, and you start to see results. But you know, you don't have to concentrate as much on it. It just becomes automatic, and that's good.
Exactly. Yeah, it's you're training a habit. Now, people say that a habit takes 30 days or 21 days to create. Well, it's all right. Habits take different amounts of time to create depending on how complex they are.
Mm-hmm.
What you are describing is a big jump. It's not going to happen in 30 days. It's not going to happen in 30 sessions. It's probably going to happen somewhere closer to, you know, 60, if not more, depending on how hard you work at it. But the point is, it's a habit, and that's what you're trying to create.
Yeah, very good.
So, you know, you mentioned, you know, who your book was targeted at. You've also got the Mental Game podcast. So who would you say, you know, why do you do the pod? I mean, we got our podcast. You got your podcast. Who are you trying to reach? And you know, why do you bring the guests on that you do, et cetera?
I mean, I think with the podcast, there's a few things that I'm trying to do. It's an opportunity for me to promote the Mental Game. And uh-huh. I think it's a way to get people seeing a side of many people that they know, you know, like Vanessa Selps, Jason Mercier, Greg Merson. I recently did one with Daniel Negreanu. You know, get to hear them talk about topics that they're not generally interviewed for. You know, the poker media has an angle, and rarely is there somebody in the media who is talking about the Mental Game. Now, it does come up, and perhaps it's come up more, you know, over the last several years, but I think the podcast is a chance for me to have a conversation strictly about topics that are related to the Mental Game. And to me, that includes development and learning, how they approach, you know, their overall, their game as a whole, their poker life balance. So it's not just about, you know, tilt and anger and anxiety stuff. You know, for a lot of these players, it's trying to get a sense of, well, what have they done to be successful? How have they become successful? What are some of their philosophies? How do they, I just interviewed Jake Cody. He's going to be my next guest. And I think a lot of people saw him as just kind of coming out of nowhere at 22 when he won the Triple Crown in 18 months. And, you know, he really did not come out of nowhere. He spent 3 or 4 years grinding through the game, you know, starting at 18. And so when you start to get a look at like the dedication that he put in those early years, you know, you start to understand that this guy really did earn what he got, and not obviously you know, you need luck to be successful in tournament poker like that, but it's not because he was a complete luck box.
I don't think you need to even be a hardcore poker fan to enjoy, you know, listening to that kind of story. And it's just very interesting to know the path that people have taken. So, and I could see that that's more than just a little slice, a niche audience of the hardcore fans. That's something, you know, that's sort of what we do as well. We take the home game angle of poker and try to do the same with the guests that we bring on too, of course.
Yeah, that's great.
I know what you're saying, because it's the same thing. We talked to the one that stands out in my mind is like Mike Sexton. Mm-hmm. You know, we interviewed him, and it was a great interview. But we started probing about his home game experience and how he started out and how when he got out of the Army in North Carolina that he was kind of running a home game with another friend and the things they ran into and what they did and that. And you could tell hearing him talk that, wow, this is something that I don't ever get to talk about very much. This is something that nobody really asks me about. Yeah. This is fun to kind of relive these memories and you kind of take it down a different road because you're kind of exploring an area that, 90% of the people that interview you aren't going to explore.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do too. And I want it to be fun for the person that I'm interviewing and not just repeating the same old stuff that they talk about everywhere else.
So, the people that do go to you for coaching, like those who, the rest of us, the regulars, like the home game people, we're going to just read the book and enjoy it. And again, having read the book, I'll definitely recommend it to our listeners. But those who, are that much more serious, the professional players, they come to you for coaching. How would you say that mental game coaching is either similar to or different from going to a psychologist for therapy? I mean, like, why wouldn't they just go to, a psychologist? What's the difference that, focused mental game coaching can offer?
The big difference is one that...
Or the similarity, sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, in looking at it in both ways, like, the big difference is that a traditional therapist, like, many of the issues that the clients that I'm working with deal with are not necessarily personal. So, like, understanding, like, what I would call this sort of area that I'm focusing on are more about, like, these performance issues. Mm. And in order to, like, dissect and understand how to correct a performance issue, you need to understand the context in which that issue is showing up. And most people, in general, don't understand poker well enough to know how to apply. In fact, when I tell people what I do, if they're not a psychologist, they think it's cool. They're like, wow, that's crazy. Like, you talk to people on the internet and working with these poker players and they're fascinated by it. They like the entrepreneurial side of it that I've like created a niche for myself. When I generally tell a psychologist or somebody in the therapy world, they assume that I'm trying to get them to stop gambling. It just sort of speaks to the judgment that still exists, not only in society, but in, my field. And so, if you go to somebody who understands poker, then they certainly can help you. But, I understand poker better than most people, and I understand poker players better than many poker players do, because I've studied them more so than, kind of living them. I'm not a poker player. I understand the game well enough. I've been around poker players long enough to understand them. I'm like, in some respects, like a sociologist, like studying this like group of people, but I don't. That sounds weird, but it's not like that. For most in most scenarios, like the other thing is that I am a licensed therapist. I mean, I have that background and training, and I can do one-on-one therapy. But the performance side of it, like what I needed when I was a golfer, was not therapy. I needed somebody who could help to correct my golf-related issues, By and large, therapists are going to be focused more on the personal stuff, and they're going to get into some of the background and the history. And that is important for some of my clients, and we do get into that occasionally. But I'd say, over 70% of the time that we are talking, it's kind of very focused on the here and now and what's going on in their poker game.
Huh. Interesting. I did just sort of have one more question. You said the mental game can only take you so far. Well, as the coach, as the Mr. Mental Game, it's taken you to a certain place. Have you ever thought or had, pipe dreams or something like that or have actually participated in any sort of big poker events? Like, do you see yourself, would it be a interesting dream of yours to, try to work on your poker game as well and see how well you could go considering that your mental game is so strong?
No. and I say that because I, on some level, I should, because I'm around it so much, but I really,
right.
I understand how good the players are that I coach and how hard they work. And the game that I love the most is golf. I uh-huh. like poker. I think it's a fun game. I played it at my bachelor party. You know, it's great. There's no doubt about it. But if you talk about doing something that you're passionate about, like I have found a career that I genuinely love and I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. Golf is the game, is the hobby, is the thing that I take the most seriously and love to play. And that is where I would pour in my time and energy. And, you know, there's no doubt that I have been the beneficiary of my mental game work because my mental game in golf has transformed over the years. So last year I qualified for a big amateur tournament called the U.S. Mid-Am, which basically means that everybody over 25 years old that has a handicap under 2 can attempt to qualify. And I'd played 13 rounds of golf prior to this qualifier. And I mean, if you're not a golfer, that's a minuscule amount. When I was playing college golf, I was playing 150 rounds of golf a year and practicing pretty much every other day. Now I was, you know, last year I'd played 13 times and practiced almost none and shot 2 under par to qualify to go to Alabama and play in this national event. It was a huge accomplishment that I know I had to really mental game myself over those last 4 or 5 holes because I knew I was in a position where I had a really good chance to qualify and I was fighting to keep myself focused on hitting each shot and not getting ahead of myself and thinking about calling my parents and posting something on Twitter and you know, all the rest of all those thoughts that, you know, poker players go through when they, you know, get close to the money or get close in being deep in a tournament. So, you know, I go through the same things and, you know, being able to kind of coach myself through that moment was exactly what I've trained my clients to be able to do for themselves. And so, right. you know, as I said, I'm the beneficiary of it. And if I'm going to put my time and energy into something, it's going to be golf at this point. And now that I've got a growing family with a 3-month-old daughter, my time is so limited that I just am really only doing things that I genuinely enjoy doing other than, you know, changing poopy diapers, which on some level I'm still enjoying.
So do you ever play any recreational home games anymore?
You know, at a circumstances, not very often. I live in New York City, and most of my friends live like kind of in the surrounding area. So like when we all get together, we usually will play we will often play poker. Sometimes on Thanksgiving we'll play, but I'd say for the most part, I probably will play poker, you know, less than 6 times a year.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but considering I play golf less than 15 times a year, it's not so bad.
Right. Your time frees up when the babies grow. That's good. I've
been told that I'm still so in it. It's hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time to spend some time with us. Fascinating subject. I mean, I'm sure we could talk for hours on it, and definitely recommend the book. You know, you've convinced me. I'm going to go out and get a copy and read it.
Awesome.
The Mental Game of Poker and Mental Game of Poker Part 2. So, before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
I would just say, you know, do what you love. Find things that you're really passionate about, and obviously all of your listeners are passionate about poker, so just make sure that it is that way for you. If it's something that's causing you too much pain and frustration, then, you know, there is a solution out there. Certainly the book can help, but sometimes even just a perspective shift can help in trying to take something a little bit less seriously.
Well, we do. Like I say, we appreciate your time, and we will, you know, put a link up on our show notes for this particular episode, you know, to the book. So if anybody's interested in looking at, you know, acquiring it, I notice it's on Kindle. That's the big fan that I am. But, you know, obviously there's hardbound available. So thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I will say one other thing, too, that the book is also on Audible, on audiobook. Uh-huh. And they can get the book for free if they don't have an Audible account. And there's information at jaredtendlerpoker.com/free. It's a pretty cool deal. I still get paid. They get a free book. Everybody wins.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll look into that, too.
One little recommendation from me, having read it. Take your time, listeners, when you read it. It took me a whole month to get through it, but it's worth, you know, spending the extra time. It's not like a magazine you flip through one page to the next. It's a good thing.
Good advice, Robbie. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much.
Take care, guys.
On the other side of the mental game of poker is the notorious brain fart. That's a specialty of Gutterball.
lessons from Gutterball, life coaching, spiritual observations, philosophical insights, and advanced slot play strategies from our favorite home game character.
Robbie, I know you're fairly new in the co-host duties, and you're doing a great job, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here on the podcast, but you probably haven't been exposed to Gutterball.
Oh, not too much yet, but
he's been kind of a character that we've had throughout the years. He's actually a local player that plays here in our group in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. Doesn't want his name used on the air. He wants to, you know, likes to be off the grid, so we've just called him Gutterball. But okay. He's a great guy, an older gentleman, retired Vietnam veteran. He's been through a lot in his life, and he always has plenty of stories to tell and funny things to say. But One of his shticks, so to speak, is to kind of feign confusion or not knowing, like, well, what are we playing? Well, what, you know, and half the time I think it's serious, and the other half the time I think it's just part of his shtick that he kind of gets people rattled as far as, you know, he told you there five different times and the button in front of you says it's Omaha High Low, you know, and he kind of grins like, yeah, I just got you rattled, didn't I? So, but a couple of 3 weeks ago I was at a game with him as you do a lot of times in the game, you're talking about a game that might have happened the week before, and this was one that he was in that was a tournament.
Okay.
And sometimes if you get busted out of the tournament early, you don't know exactly how it winds up, so you're always interested. So he was saying, well, who took first place in that tournament? And I said, well, it was Rick. Rick! Who's Rick? And we only have one guy in our group named Rick. We've got a few duplicate names, and only one named Rick. And I said, well, you know Rick. You've played with him a lot. Rick! Rick. I said, yeah, he's the one that plays, we've played with Todd and his group up there in Suncoast Subdivision. Rick. And all of a sudden the light goes off. Oh, you mean Rick? And I just shook my head and said, geez, I'm sorry. I must have mispronounced it.
Seat open, table one. Hey, wait a sec. I know this guy. He sat on my left yesterday. I wish I remember how he played.
You should have taken notes.
Oh, come on. I'm not bringing a notebook to the table. I'll look like a fish.
You don't have to. There's an app for that. Poker Notes Live. Notice a tell? Want to keep track of your live poker sessions? Use the Poker Notes Live app to tag and classify your opponents. Record your wins and losses and improve your overall performance at the poker table. Poker Notes Live. Get it now on Google Play and the App Store. Don't ante up without it. Brought to you by CardPlayerLifestyle.com.
All the cards have been dealt for this episode of Top Pair. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and entertaining. Please plan to join for our next installment. For a more in-depth look at the Top Pair podcast, including access to past episodes, topics to be covered in the future, and links to our information mentioned, log on to our website at www.toppair.net. Just a reminder that we love your input. Contact us via email, feedback@toppair.net, or leave us a recorded shout-out on our listener line, 206-339-7401. After all, we're not right all the time, just 99%. The Top Pair theme music is provided by Josh Woodward. Check it out at www.joshwoodward.com.